House Education Committee come to order. Let the record show it's 8:05 a.m. Wednesday, February 16th. Will the secretary call roll?
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Representative Steen.
Here.
Representative Feigen.
Here.
Representative Pruitt.
Coming in the door.
Representative Kawasaki.
Here.
Here. Okay, we do have a quorum, and I'd like to remind everybody, including myself, to turn off cell phones. We have a presentation this morning by Superintendent Dave Herbert from St. Mary's School District, and Sheila's going to get Google Earth to zoom us in so everybody knows where St. Mary's is, and I understand that, there we go, we're zooming in. Amazing. And Superintendent Herbert's going to introduce himself, and he's going to, and then we're going to watch the video that was presented. The videography was done by the students. So, Superintendent Herbert, you online?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, if you go ahead with your presentation, I believe Sheila's ready to hit play.
Sure.
Thank you, and good morning, members of the committee. My name is Dave Herbert. I am the proud superintendent of St. Mary's School District. I'd like to begin by just giving you a little bit of background information on St. Mary's School District, and then we'll follow up with a DVD that was created by our students here in St. Mary's. St. Mary's School District is a remote, single-site bush district. We're located in southwest Alaska on the Andrusky River. We have approximately 200 students in grades preschool through 12th grade. We have a 100% Yupik Alaska Native student population. I've been the superintendent here in St. Mary's for the last 6 years, and we're very proud of the fact that we've made AYP five of the last 6 years. And the St. Mary's School District is now currently at level zero, which is the best AYP ranking a school district can achieve in the state of Alaska. We have 72% of the students in grades 3 through 10 proficient in language arts, according to state standard-based assessments, and 80% of the students in grades 3 through 12 proficient in mathematics. And again, that's according to the state standard-based assessments of this last testing period. We have a 90% graduation rate. Now, we think these are some pretty impressive statistics, and I would like to share with you why we've been able to experience these successes. First and foremost, we have outstanding students, parents, community members, teachers, and support staff that work in our district. They are the main reason that we've been able to demonstrate these successes. But in addition to those factors, we've implemented a relevant instruction program, which has helped us engage the community, make learning relevant for our students, and gain parental support for our district and what we're doing within the district. Excuse me. Today we're going to share with the committee a DVD that showcases the St. Mary's School District relevant instruction activities. We feel that the outdoor relevant instruction offered here in St. Mary's has played a big part in helping improve the academic proficiency levels of the students we serve. St. Mary's School District Outdoor Relevant Instruction Program utilizes the state of Alaska grade level expectations in a relevant and meaningful manner, which provides true relevancy to the unique student population that we serve, and a community environment in which we live. So during the outdoor relevant instruction trips, students are required to collect vegetation samples, water samples, perform mathematical computations, write daily journal entries with specific writing prompts, utilize GPS systems, and learn parts of the Yupik language. These are just some of the academics that the students are required to perform throughout the trip. When students return from their own instruction trips, they're required to complete a project following a clear and concise rubric, which incorporates the data collected on the trip and utilizes reading, writing, math, and science, additional classroom instruction, and technology. These projects meld together the state grade level expectations, the experiences of the trip, the data collected on the trip, into an exciting, relevant educational project. Students must meet stringent criteria in order to be eligible to go on these trips. Some of these criteria include good attendance, not being tardy to class, good behavior, and they must be passing all classes. These trips are a big incentive for the students to perform and ensure they meet the criteria, which helps the school climate throughout the year. Parents and community members are actively involved in the planning and organizing of the trips and participate in relevant instruction trips. Parents are required to attend meetings at the school and participate in order for their child to be able to go on these trips. They're aware of the criteria for their child to be eligible to participate on the trips and are aware of and given a copy of the rubric that will be used for the culminating project, which again incorporates the grade level expectations that are taught on the trips. Staff members participate in the relevant instruction trips, and it really helps to provide an outdoor experience which creates a very unique and positive bond with the students that lasts throughout the year in the classroom. Just as an example, we had a new math teacher from Oregon who had never been to Alaska before. She was able to participate in a week-long relevant instruction moose hunting trip with the high school students. This really allowed her to gain some insight into the type of lifestyle our students and community members live and provide an opportunity for the students to become the teachers in certain situations and for her to be able to create a knowledge base from which to draw throughout the school year in the academic classroom setting. So once the students' projects have been completed and whatever was harvested has been properly taken care of, the district puts on a fall feed for the community. During the month of October, people in our area are not able to get out as much due to the fact that the rivers may be frozen but not safe. It's too early for people to travel by snow machine, and it makes it an ideal time to pull the entire community together to see the projects that have been created by the students, to feed the community with the items harvested by the students. And it's really helped the school district to build support for our programs and allow the community to take pride in their school and become involved in something relevant and meaningful that they can relate to and that values the local culture, while at the same time teaching the students the required state of Alaska grade level expectations. So I hope this brief introduction has provided you with some insight and a little bit of background on the St. Mary's School District and a relevant instruction program. I now invite you to enjoy the DVD you're about to see, which was created by the students of the school district. It's not perfect, as the students are continuing to learn. However, we're very proud of the work the students have accomplished in our district, and I think you'll be able to get the idea of what our relevant instruction program is all about through watching this DVD. I ask you to pay close attention to the students' voices
every year
as they're reading and describing things, what they wrote, and at the end of each cultural trip, brief introduction to cultural relevant instruction trips, you'll see some brief examples of student projects at the end of each trip. So these projects and the trips are attended by students in the 6th through 12th grade. And in the spring, we do trips for preschool through 12th grade. So if you have any questions about the program after viewing the DVD, I'll be happy to answer those. So at this time, if we could please start the DVD, unless there's any questions before we get going.
No, Sheila had just hit the play button.
Every year,
St. Mary's City School District allows their students
to go on outdoor education trip.
So says the moose hunting.
The coastal trip.
And the white fish trip.
This video will give you a good.
What can we do on this trip?
And here's some experience from some of the students.
Enjoy!
There was a rock that was gray as a cloudy, dark day. Mud covered almost the entire rock. My eyes wandered past the rock and saw a patch of bright green grass as though it had just grown overnight. All the leaves and grass looked withered and ancient compared to that patch of grass. The leaves were already turning to a gold color mixed with orange and green. The sun dropped behind the trees and they were glowing. I glanced at the island across me, and the river seemed as though a skilled artist had polished it. The aged trees at the edge of the island appeared to be as if they were gazing at themselves in the mirror-like water. The water had a glossy look, which made everything that was able to reflect in it look crystal clear. The sun just began to set and made the sky pink with a streak of orange. The reflections of the sky and the water made the water seem unreal, like a fairy and a unicorn were about to pop out anytime soon. Then I closed my eyes and reflected on what I just seen. I inhaled the first smell of the cold autumn air and memorized the feeling of that relaxing moment.
Pie Mute. It offers a plentiful supply of food, everlasting fresh air, and freedom from the technological world. It feels refreshing in many ways, fun while hunting and relaxing with friends, and like the real Alaska. It required 5 boats to get there, food to last for 4 days, and patience for the awaited hunt. It is puzzling with its numerous turns, many land features, and endless blanket of trees. It costs money for gas, 675.8 gallons for 5 boats to split, enough food for days, but the experience is priceless. Hopeful hunters, wild animals, and loyal state officials go there. It is on the Yukon River near Russian Mission and Holy Cross, and connected to 12 Mile Slough. It looks surreal, has many trees and muddy banks, and resembles a beautiful painting. Scenic.
The slough connects to the muddy brown bank at water's edge. Above the mud is green grass that cuts off into a mixture of green and yellow leaves, turning color with the season. Towering above them to the north is a line of tall, dark green spruce trees. To the west is a bend with a little hill of grass and a pile of sun-bleached gray sage. Below the bend is an opening of blue sky. To the west is a line of cottony white clouds that make you just want to lay in them and fall fast asleep. Around the bend of the first slough is a maze of sloughs that go in and out left to right. They are filled with sticks and logs that wash up during high water. The mud is packed with fresh moose and bear cherry. The moose tracks guide your eyes into a swamp resplendent with moose and all sorts of animal cherry. It is a scene of marvelous landscape.
Pigments from carotenoids. We got them from yellow leaves. They are present in the leaves throughout the growing season, but they don't show until chlorophyll fades in the fall. These are the anthocyanins. It comes from the blueberry leaves in the fall. Unlike the carotenoids, these pigments are not present in the leaf throughout the growing season, but it is actively produced in the late summer.
The coast. It offers a warm cabin with wood stoves and beds, fresh air from riding in the boat, and a lot of new experiences from the coast. It feels cold when we wake up in the middle of the night, warm in the day because we are up in a boat, and breezy from going on the boat ride. It requires lots of warm clothes such as snow pants, boots, gloves, a hat, a warm winter coat, and some rain gear. Some food to survive and a lot of gas to get down there, to come back up and to ride around and look for seals and whales. I wonder why there are only seals at the coastal area and not around the Yukon area, why it is so flat and treeless, and why there is a tide in the ocean and not around where we live. It costs a lot of money for gas because we needed to get down and back from the coast. A week off of school, but we still did some work. And it costs manpower to drive the boats. Birds such as geese, swans, ducks, crows, seagulls, and cranes. Seals such as spotted seals, bearded seals, and the ringed seal. And whales are there. It is by Kotlik on the coastline of Alaska and almost by now. It looks flat and there are no hills, treeless, and there are a lot of sloughs that are going in and out of every camp. whitefish trip. It offers exciting, fun, delicious fish and a fun boat ride. It feels like calm and quiet camp, nice warmth and cool coldness. It requires delicious food, warm shelter, and sliminess. I wonder if our fireplace is still in the same place. I wonder if the snow is shallower than before. I wonder how it looks now. It costs time for good participation, nice teamwork, and helping hands. There were many my classmates and eighth graders, chaperones, and I there. It is below Pilot Station on the Yukon River and in the Kasunuk Slough. It looks like it has muddy water, beautiful nature, and this place has many trees. If I had a name to call it, it would be called the Whitefish Slough, from by Dorothy S. James.
Nutan Dornbiloktuk. Makes me homesick. Makes me proud of you guys too. Dave, that's I'm getting a little emotional here. Thank you. That was good. We do need to move on, but Dave, I really, really appreciate that. I've been telling people, and I've been spending hours and hours trying to tell people, and you just did it in very short period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dick. I appreciate the time to present before the committee. And again, we're very proud of where we're at. And I think some of these, the relevant instruction that takes place, not just on the outdoor just education trips, but for example, I was just talking with our social studies teacher and gave them some of the education bills, so that our students are engaged in relevancy of what's going on in within our state, the state legislature. These types of things really do help to spark the interest of students in the education arena. So I just appreciate the time before you, and I know that we went a little bit over the 10 minutes, so thank you, and I'll end with that unless there's any questions.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave, how many trips per year, and I know you do it at different grade levels, but how many trips a year, and then how many credits does it take to graduate at St. Mary's?
We have a trip that starts, so we have a moose hunting trip. Actually, we have a sixth grade Weir trip where they go up the Andresky up to the Weir and work with the people at the Weir counting the salmon and do fish studies. So that's with the sixth grade. Then we have the seventh and eighth grade Kashunuk trip, which is the whitefish trip and the clamming fish. Whitefish and clamming trip. And then we have a moose hunting trip for 9th through 12th grade, a coastal trip for 9th through 12th grade. We're getting ready to do our winter camping, trapping, caribou trip. And then we have a spring munup trip, which is a spring ice fishing trip for preschool through 12th grade with all the families. So nice. I guess that adds up to about seven trips throughout the year. We are traditional, we have a traditional Carnegie unit credits, and I believe you asked how many credits it takes to graduate from St. Mary's School District, did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Okay, so obviously we have different credits in different areas, but it requires 4 credits to graduate in English, 3 credits in math, 3 credits in science, 3 credits in social studies, 1 credit in computer science, a half a credit in physical education, a half a credit in health, and seven elective credits. So a total of 22 credits are required, 22 condo units.
Okay, thank you. You make me want to.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, is that Representative Sisson online?
Yes.
Good morning.
I just wanted to ask and first of all make a quick comment on, I was not able to see the video, but I could hear it, and with what I thought were beautifully written comments by the students, was given enough feeling about what this was all about that it fits exactly what to me would seem like the perfect way to make the local environment really part of the school system in a really important way. The question is, are there studies that you kind of retrofit into the local environment in terms of science, geography, other things that really do come from the local setting, but would fit into a university study, essentially?
So that's my, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, so I guess I'll respond in this manner. The base, the driving force for our instructional program is the state of Alaska grade level expectations. That is the, that drives all instruction. So I'll start with that. And then I will say that it is essential to incorporate the surrounding environment whenever possible. And we haven't used any university studies or to develop these. These have been developed by our teachers here in the school district, by myself, and by the local folks that have helped us and the parents. And so where these trips go, the kids talk about that. They discuss where they're going, what they're going to be doing. The parents participate and the community participates. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but it all starts with the grade level expectations. I mean, we're here to educate the students, and believe me, I love the outdoors and I love doing these things, but I know what my job is, and this community, the community of St. Mary's, expects nothing less than their children to receive a quality education. And so that's what I'm challenged with as a superintendent. I then pass that on to our teachers and support staff to ensure that that these kids are getting quality education. We just do it in a manner that at certain times of the year provides relevancy to the students, and that is something that can be drawn on throughout the year. I mean, the majority of our school days are not on these, conducted out in the outdoors. And that we have different times throughout the year that we insert these relevant instruction trips, and it creates bonds with the teachers, the students, incentives for the students. It allows the students to incorporate things that they've learned, the standards that they've learned in the classroom. It takes the classroom out into the environment and then the environment back into the classroom. And it's just, it really is a way that these students can connect to learning because I think most of that was demonstrated hopefully through the video in certain ways. So I don't want to mislead you in saying that all we do is outdoor relevant instruction, because that's not true. We have we try to provide a very rigorous, academic environment here within the classroom setting. And I think if you walked in most days out of the year, you would see a very traditional school setting. However, these outdoor relevant instruction trips that we provide to the students, again, engage the parents, create support, breaks down barriers, allows the community to be proud of their school and participate in their school and become involved. And that, all of that together is, I think, what's really helped us be able to continue to try to improve the academic setting here in St. Mary's. So No university studies, I guess, long-winded response, but rather local teachers, elders, former graduates that all work together to try to provide that setting for the students.
Dave, thank you. We do need to move. We do need to move on here. We do have a couple of bills to look at, but Dave, I really want to thank you. You know, a lot of people in urban settings think that we're poor, and you've shown people here in the committee, and we're on television as well. You've shown them how rich we really are out in the woods. So I really do thank you, and I'd like the committee to know. Oh, excuse me, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate the presentation, Dave. Do we have the authority to share this DVD with other school districts and when they come to town and are talking to us and we're trying to explain some of these concepts, can we show this DVD to them?
Representative Seaton, I just need to get some permission signed, but I certainly can do that with the students here if it's going to be distributed publicly. We have permissions for, you know, we just can't. If the parents were to see it on YouTube, we have permissions to show it to the education committee, but I just would want to make sure that we've got all those permissions in place, but certainly I can work on that for you. That should be a fairly easy task, because I think everybody's pretty proud of what's been going on here.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, not talking about distributing it beyond, education communities, but it does provide, you know, a really good basis for us to talk about relevancy when we're talking to other education. So I'd appreciate that if you could send that to the chairman, if that works out.
Okay.
I will certainly follow up on that.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. And I'd like the committee to know, Dave, since I've been here, I've been using the word relevant. I said it's a one-word solution for the education in the book, and that's relevance. And I want the committee to know I did not talk with Superintendent Herbert, and I did not prompt him to use the word relevance, but I bet he used that word 12 to 15 times. So, sir, you preached my sermon, and I'm not jealous at all. Thank you for help. We do need to move on. Okay, the purpose of the rest of the meeting today is HB 93, School Gardens, Greenhouses, and Farms. We'll have the first hearing. Representative Gutenberg is here, and we will not move it from committee today. And we'll also have HB 132, Funding for School Meals, sponsored by Representative Munoz. We'll have a second hearing. We have students that want to comment, and the intent is to pass it out of committee today. So, Representative Gutenberg, would you present your bill, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing the bill. I take you from hunter-gatherers to gardeners.
There we go.
And actually, they're very, very relevant. And just as you got emotional watching those children do the things that they do, when this program, which is successfully implemented in Fairbanks by Calypso Farm, presented it to the community, after it had been in place for a while, I think it was last year, the enthusiasm from the children was just amazing. And there were a lot of comments that I got, but it was just quite delightful to see this young girl talking about her involvement in the program and saying she just liked to compost. But what HB 93 does is it allows nonprofits in any community in the state to partnership with a school district to have a community garden. The origin of this, from my involvement, is watching Calypso Farm in Fairbanks partnership with the school district to create these gardens in the schools program. And it is phenomenally successful. It engages students, it engages the community by matching them up. Right now, schools can do their own community gardens or school gardens, but I think there's only one or two in the state that do that. And it's very, I think the reason it's there are so few is because it's so difficult. And Calypso, as an educational opportunity, brings that motivation in and engages the teachers, because you have to have a buy-in. You can't just mandate this to happen. You can't just tell a school to have a garden. You can't just tell a teacher she's now teaching gardening. But it brings a partnership together with people that have a love for this, engages the teachers, and engages the students. And watching what happened in Fairbanks, sitting down with Calypso and their staff, trying to figure out how to expand this throughout the state, those folks do not want to become statewide program managers. They just like what they're doing locally. But this allows anybody in anybody's community, whether it's the 4-H or the Kiwanis or a local tribal entity or anybody else, to meet with the school, raise matching funds, and sit down and apply for a grant and produce a garden. In Fairbanks, the schools each do about 800 pounds of produce is what they've produced per school. That's a lot of vegetables. And the fiscal note, which is kind of deceptive, but what it represents at $5 million is if next year every school in the district had a garden. So if you imagine that if every school next year had a garden and was producing vegetables, imagine every school in your district from the three levels of schools producing 800 pounds of vegetables. Imagine every community, every school in every one of your communities producing 800 pounds of vegetables. That would be wildly successful. I don't think that's going to happen. If we would be realistic about it, it would be a slow ramp up, and I don't think anybody expects there to be more than a handful, even in the largest school districts, doing this. But I have other people online that would like to testify that know quite a bit about this program, and I would leave it for their words.
Okay. Brief at ease. Back in order. First, I'd like to have the any questions from the Education Committee. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Guttenberg, I'm trying to figure out why this is directed to an entire district, so that normally we would have pilots in districts if you have multiple schools. Like on the Kenai Peninsula, it might be Homer or Seward, or it might be Kenai that wants to establish this. But as I read the bill, unless there's a nonprofit that wants to do 1/2 of 1% of the total student allocation to the district, it doesn't go forward. And it seems to be that threshold is, extremely hard to meet, and it's going to mean that many places where they want to start a project in one or two schools are going to be prevented from doing it, because it would have to be an allocation of 1/2 of 1% of the entire allocation under 14-17-400. Can you explain to me why it's set up that the whole district has to participate instead of proportionally, if two schools want to do it and the percentage and the number of students is 1/10 of the number of schools in the district, that there's not some kind of a proportionality factor in here?
Well, I think the buy-in is per school district. I mean, per school. The matching funds is per school. But it also is maybe I could bring my hard drive up here to explain it better. Jay Hardenbrook from my staff.
Yes, I'm Jay Hardenbrook, staff to Representative Guttenberg. The intent of the bill is to do it on a school building by school building basis. The school building received the state aid received per school building, but the school district itself would have to apply for the grant. The idea was that the school district should have buy-in with the nonprofit. So the school district applies for the grant on a per building basis for a school garden that's operating at a school building.
Follow up.
Thank you. And so if that's the intent, I'm just trying to figure out if that's what the bill says, because on page one, you know, lines 7, 8, and 9, it says, you know, that the nonprofit authorized must contribute to the operation of each school garden an amount equal to the greater of 0.5% of the state aid received by the school district for the entire, for each school year. So
for the school each year. So the intent of the language, what we at least set out, was for the school each year. So for the school where the garden, farm, or greenhouse operates.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman.
A follow-up?
So following up on the sheet that we have that lays out the, in the fiscal note, that lays out the projected 0.5%, those are on the entire school district, but those funds wouldn't have to be there, because if it was only 5% of the schools, then we'd be looking at 5% of that amount. Is that? Yeah,
absolutely. That's what we would say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it the purpose, besides education, to also provide a source of fresh vegetables and whatnot to the school district meal program?
It certainly is a byproduct, you know, as a result of you're teaching children to raise vegetables and fruit, and they do use them in the school. The children do use them, and they in Fairbanks, I can tell you what they do in Fairbanks. I can't tell you what they're going to do someplace else. But they sell the excess in at the farmer's market and bring it back into the program. But it is part of the program to allow students to understand, to consume what they're raising, and they do use it. I believe they do use it in some school districts, in some of the schools.
Follow up.
In that case, is there anything that needs to be put in the bill regarding altering existing DEC regs, is the greenhouse considered an approved source of food for a, you know, a public meal program like that?
Representative Feige, through the chair, this is Jay Hardenbrook again. Yes, the I believe Calypso Farms, who someone from Calypso should be online, will be able to speak to that more. They're working on a pilot project. They currently allow them as snacks in several schools, but they're working on a pilot program with a middle school in Fairbanks to do exactly that, to bring the fresh-grown vegetables into school lunches. So I think they could speak to that better than us, since they're actually operating the program. So,
okay.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for presenting this bill, Representative. The way I read it, just to address Representative Seaton's concern, it seems like the school district is the authorizing agency in line four, and then each school would have to apply for matching grants. The fiscal note reflects if every school would have applied, so that's why it seems like a rather large fiscal note in this case. I had a question about if you can explain sort of the you mentioned that I already know the answer to this, but funding sources prior to how schools are currently funding these school programs within school districts.
Bake sale. I mean, they're raising money, they're scraping it together wherever they can. And then Calypso Farm has grants to do their side of it. And Susan, if she's online, or somebody from the farm can get into how that happened.
And then
follow-up?
Yeah, second question, section four, adding a new subsection on the authorization of the nonprofit. The question is, if the school district authorizes the nonprofit to operate the garden, they must apply for the funds? And I was wondering, what if they don't want to apply for funds?
They don't have to get them. I mean, this is a buy-in. You assume that they're going to want to be doing the program. If they can do the program without applying for the funds, I mean, so much the better, so much more independent.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I would assume they wouldn't apply for the farm-to-school program that this has been added on to if they didn't want to be part of the grant proposal. They probably just wouldn't even, they wouldn't even file under this particular program if they didn't want to, get the grant money.
Okay.
Okay. Any other question? Well, I believe we have people here in the room that would like to testify, but perhaps we should just, you referred to Susan, maybe we should go off net. And Susan Wolfsrunde, are you there? I was thinking.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Susan, if you would, you'd like to testify, I think you have answered a lot of our questions.
Yes, I'd be happy to. My name is Susan Wilrude. I'm the farm director at Calypso Farm and Ecology Center. And I can give you a brief description of the Schoolyard Garden Initiative, which is the program that Representative Guttenberg has been referring to. It is a farm-to-school program here in Alaska. It's led by Calypso Farm and Ecology Center. We're an educational farm. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. The program is a partnership, is in partnership with the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District, and it's one example of a program that would benefit from the passage of this bill. The Schoolyard Garden Initiative is a network of large multi-purpose school gardens. Each of these gardens is a dynamic outdoor classroom, and it's also a food production site for the surrounding community, the school, you know, people in this in the neighborhood. And then each of these gardens is also a context for a very unique summer job training program for teens. And I can explain that a little bit. The program itself was piloted in 2003, and it initiated on request and interest from the community. And so what we did is we started with one school. Now, over time, it's evolved and grown to include seven schools. This summer, we expect to engage about 150 young people between the ages of 12 and 18 during the summer to work as student gardeners. They maintain these gardens over the summer. And then each garden grows over 25 different types of vegetables, herbs, flowers, and I know you've got people in the room there who have seen the gardens and can attest to that. They're very vibrant and full of life. And then each of these gardens actually produces closer to upwards of a ton of vegetables. So we're looking at actually 2,000 pounds. 800 pounds is probably a volume that can go just in the fall to the school. But over the entire summer, last year, Hunter Elementary School produced, a conservative estimate is 3,000 pounds of produce. And that food goes into the community in a number of ways. It goes home with the student gardeners who work in the garden. It's sold to the community through farm stands where they accept food stamps and WIC coupons or cash. And then a portion is donated to the local food kitchen. And then in the fall, the food, when school starts back up, the food is used in the school in a variety of different ways. And like Jay mentioned, getting the food in directly into the school lunches offers several unique challenges. And we're really excited to be piloting in partnership with Farm to School and in partnership with the DEC. We'll be piloting a direct produce into the school lunch system at Randy Smith Middle School. And so this will be a chance to really address all of those difficult issues of how to get locally grown food straight into the actual school lunches. So right now, as Guttenberg described, the food is used as a snack item. It's used creatively by individual teachers in different ways in their classrooms. And several of the schools hold large school family night harvest celebrations in which hundreds of pounds of produce is processed into soup and, you know, a big party and a meal. So it's been used in those ways, but we really have our eye on getting it right into the food stream there in the schools. And so there's a bit on the food. The other equally important part of these gardens is they're an educational resource at each school. And with Calypso's support, we've been able to assist teachers in using the gardens. And 100% of the teachers last year in our, at that time, six schools participating, use the garden educationally. And this garden is used not just to create a connection to food and agriculture and farming for students, but it's actually a hands-on context for teaching core subjects. So what we focus on in the garden is teaching math in the garden, science, language, art, so that it has, we're really focused on multi-purposes around this, these gardens. And so, you know, the passage of this bill is not only an investment in school gardens scattered around the state, it's an investment in youth, the health of our communities, and in the bigger context, as you heard extrapolated, if every school had a program like this going, that takes us leagues in our own community food security. So that's kind of the bigger long-term picture. At this time, over the last, I'd say, 5 years in particular that we've really gained success and here at Fairbanks, we get regular calls from all over the state. On a regular basis, people are calling, asking for tips, trying to figure out how can we start this in this in their own community. And so that's one reason that we are a huge, you know, huge supporters of this bill, not only to benefit and be able to expand and grow and our programs here at Fairbanks, we'd like to see other communities have the ability to do the same thing. And so I really thank you for listening and hearing this, and I'm happy to answer any questions that come up.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And when you started Calypso Farms, how did you finance your startup cost?
We're a nonprofit, and what we've done is we've been a very grassroots organization. We literally asked everybody that we knew. We have there was a lot of support here in the community. So our money comes from individual donations, and then also grants and earned income, because we're an educational farm, so we also can, you know, we sell vegetables. And so it's about a third of each, grants, individual contributions in different ways, that's special events, membership, donations. So that's how we got the farm going. And actually, the Alaska Conservation Foundation gave us an initial startup to just get with small grant of $11,000 to get the farm up and running.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of the grant income, where do you receive the grants from? What's the source? And how much of your operations can you fund through the sale of those the produce?
The produce? At the school garden, are you talking specifically for the school garden initiative program?
No, with your existing farms, which is basically an example of what this program is trying to enable.
Right.
Where are you currently getting your grants from, and the income that you generate through the sale of your produce?
Right.
If you generate any, how much of your operation cost does that account for?
Okay. The grants is a dicey part of the equation because it's so unstable. At this point, there are several programs. There's one through the USDA called Community Food Projects, and that is a grant program that will give multiple year grants. We got a 3-year grant through the USDA. It covered about 20% of the program cost, which at that time was about $30,000 a year, and that was to get this schoolyard garden initiative kind of up and running and expanded. We also get small grants from corporations, very small. We're talking in the $1,000 and lower range. The largest grant that Calypso has ever received is $30,000. So we piece together fairly small grants, Alaska Conservation Foundation, small family foundations, and it right now it encompasses maybe 20% of our entire entire income. Our earned income for the farm encompasses on the order of 50% of our annual operating income. The the actual Schoolyard Garden Initiative, they also sell produce. You know, each of the schools has an earned income component because they are selling produce through the farm stands. However, with the produce going into the schools, into the community, to the soup kitchens, home with the kids, that earned income potential of selling the produce at the schools is about 20% instead of 50%, which it is for our farm. Right now, our, you know, Calypso can bring in almost 50% of our total annual operating budget through earned income. And that's not just vegetable sales, that's also fee-based programming. But at the schools, we think the potential is around 15 to 20%. Does that help answer your question?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions of Susan? Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead. Is this Representative Cisna?
It is.
Oh.
And
go ahead.
My question is that there are spinoffs in anything of this nature in gardening that might fit smaller schools in different kinds of locations. Farming is absolutely very good to do in Fairbanks, but there's rural communities, for instance, or even maybe downtown Anchorage. If there were parts of the gardening that were done, for instance, I'm thinking of working on how to build good, healthy soil with recycled stuff. A friend of mine has a worm ranch, as an example. Is there a way to actually have to maybe broaden this out a little bit in terms of building the environment? And do you do that at Calypso? Is that something you do in terms of how to grow it in healthy soil, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. We partner with some local agencies here to help teachers get worm bins going. Soils are a really important part. And, you know, Representative Guttenberg and his assistant Jay are going to be able to speak more to how the intricacies of the bill itself. But from our perspective and through our conversations, what we've realized and we know clearly is that Alaska is so diverse that the program that we have running here is modeled and very well suited for our environment, the size of our community, and it's working. And we recognize that everywhere across the state of Alaska is going to have different communities, environments, growing possibilities. And so I know from our discussions about this bill and the potential is that each and every community can design a program that has several elements in place that are common, and each program will look very different. And one of the pieces that is in place here is this partnership between a school district and a nonprofit organization. And one of the reasons that I believe this is a strong way to work together is it ties the community to a school district, and it creates a support network for both. Here in Fairbanks, we've had school gardens come and go. The common thread is we just can't do it. As teachers, as parents, at the school, we can't carry on this, you know, all of these things. We're focused on the school. What we do as a nonprofit, and every community in this state has an organization that is not necessarily an educational farm, but that has reason to benefit and reason to be invested in a program like this, because it not only encompasses education, it encompasses youth, health, community vitality, community food security. And so having that nonprofit involved is basically a support network. And so that's a commonality, but every community, this picture is going to look different.
Great. Okay, Representative, who's next? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your testimony, and I'm trying to kind of figure out a handle with seven schools. How much is your budget for for operation in with that seven schools?
Right now, it costs us approximately $15,000 per school, and what that covers is we actually hire a school garden supervisor. They are a fairly low-paid intern. We provide them with a monthly stipend, a place to live, food, and we hire one for each school. So this year, we have a school in the wings who there are a student and a teacher who will be who are scheduled to talk. So there's a school in the wings. We have five supervisors for this summer that cover six schools, which is a little confusing. Two of the schools are across the street from one another and can be covered by one person. So we have five people that we're hiring, and then that also covers seed, start, program coordination, evaluation, that's summer programming, which is the youth program, and that's also our supervisors. They come on in April, and they stay through September, so 6 months. Full-time, and they're working intensively with teachers, principals, during the spring and fall, during those 6 months at schools and sessions, and then they're working with parents, community members, and teenagers during the summer. And so our biggest cost is staffing those individuals. But there's other infrastructure costs, sheds, tools, cell phones, first aid classes, porta-potties, you know, it adds up.
Okay. Thank you. Follow-up?
So am I understanding your program is slightly more than $100,000? Is that the total funding for the program for the seven schools?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and so am I understanding the bill correctly that would be approximately a $50,000 split between the community, the nonprofit, and the Department of Education? Is that your understanding of the bill?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How close to the school property are these gardens? Are they real close so the kids can go in and out? When they have a class, they can just go outside right away and take part and then go back in, or do they have to take a bus back and forth? Or
they're actually on the school property, and in some cases, they're right smack in the front of the school, and the kids actually, one of them's on a playground at the elementary school, or the Wood River Elementary. The garden is actually situated right on the primary school playground. And actually, there were concerns about that at first, and once the garden went in, the upper grades said they wished it was on their part of the playground. So they're actually right on the school grounds, and that is the other reason that it's so important that this partnership be with the school district and as an overarching partner, because the school district facilities person has a huge stake in this, because these gardens are, some of them, on the order of a quarter acre. And every school is different, and every playground offers different opportunities and different challenges. But this is a very big piece of the school grounds. And so, therefore, it's incredibly accessible. There are teachers who use it every single day of the fall where the garden's active. And then several of the schools have little weather stations out there and will continue to go out there all through the winter and extend their lessons through the winter. And so these are very much part of the school.
Yeah. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I was just wondering if you could give us your estimation of how long it would be before other schools were able to actually get a program in place. I notice in here you say that there's been interest from Soldotna, Kenai, Haines, and Juneau. And what I'm trying to figure out is, I really support the program, but with a $5 million fiscal note, this is going to need transition language, it's going to need ramp-up language or something. Otherwise, with the fiscal climate that we're in and trying to look at funding sources, I think it is not probably going to go forward. So Can you give us your best estimate of what a ramp up number of schools would be? And I'm assuming that those costs for the other nonprofits would be similar to what you have for those seven schools. But can you give us some estimate of how many, if this bill passed, how many schools would be able to start up a program in the next year or 2 years from now, those kind of things?
My guess is that although there are a number of places that are interested in getting schools started, and there also are schools in Anchorage, and there are also schools in Homer, and that have been, you know, working towards this, that we've been talking to, this is a slow, it's a long-term process. In Fairbanks, when we start talking, when a school talks to us and we start talking with a new school, we're looking at 3 years out often before it goes through the planning, talking, to being able to start breaking ground. And so my guess is that with the exception, there's a school in Homer that's closer. My thought is there would not be more than two additional schools in the next year, and I think it's possible there wouldn't be any that soon. But I would think two schools in the next 2 years, to be very realistic.
So,
follow up.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. So, if there was transition language that would limit this to 10 schools in the next year, and then maybe 15 in the following year, adding five schools a year for the next 5 years, do you think that would constrain growth over? I mean, I know it's difficult for nonprofits to form and do these things. So even though it's very desirable from our standpoint on education, would that be reasonable, or should in the fourth and fifth year, do you think this would accelerate even more than adding five schools per year?
I would actually recommend your suggestion, and that even though we want to see these things explode, actually, faster is not always better, and I would recommend, for fiscal reasons and for practical reasons and for the long-term health of these kind of programs, I would recommend putting in that type of a limit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no other questions, I think we're going to – we have Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, if we help get this started, can we back up a little bit once we get it started? Because I know it costs a lot more to get it in place and to get the spot for the garden and everything. Could, once we got it started, could we back up a little bit so that it's not, you know, the major expense is at the beginning, and I know you still have to, sounds like, hire someone, that would, but if we could taper off a little bit so that we could help more schools get started?
I think that's a possibility. The thing to keep in mind is to run this program effectively, there are annual operating costs, and that's just the long-term nature of this type of a program. Because you are, in order to really make sure that you're maximizing the benefit of these gardens, the schools, the communities, the gardens, they need staffing. And there's something that's happened across the country, is there's been, you know, mandated school garden initiatives, and this, the United States right now is full of basically abandoned school gardens. They're everywhere. And that's because there is an initial push, and then there isn't funding for it. So I would say, yes, you could back up. I think the matching share from the state of Alaska could be backed off as the program becomes more established. But I think the fundamental concept that there's a need for annual operating support should be there. What I'd like to see is that each school in each community grows that percentage of matching from 50% to 75%.
Okay, thank you.
That the community, the local community, can match that as the program grows. That also limits the speed that it can grow, and I think that's healthy.
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other questions, we're going to go to Fairbanks School District, and then after that we'll have Mark Lewis, who's here in the room with us, and then it'll be followed by Francie Havemeister. So, Wendy Hagee and Hunter Nance, are you online with Fairbanks School District?
Yes, we are.
Okay, go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, I'm going to start first. We're going to get my teacher right now, okay? I go to Chinook School. I am a boy, and I am 12 years old and in 7th grade. At my school, we are currently planning to begin building and gardening this year. Our challenge as we get it going has been planting, so I ask you guys to support House Bill 93. Now I will share with you many positive ways gardens would benefit the students in our community. Gardens would be a great experience for younger kids to learn about plants and ecology and have great visual diagrams. Gardens would offer hands-on learning. Personally, I love hands-on learning because I think that I learn more and I have a living plant that I could feed, take care of, harvest, and eat. But it's a lot more interesting to learn about plants when you're doing something with them rather than just reading about them in a book. It's a great opportunity to have a healthy snack grown locally. It would rub off personally habits on the students. It's great for students to learn about what a tenure job is like, because the gardens would provide job opportunities. But they would gain good working skills. Students would be outside and active rather than playing video games and watching TV. It teaches us about different varieties of vegetables and how students can grow their own gardens. It gives them an understanding of plants, and they get to bring home healthy vegetables every week, which teaches the students great food habits. It's great that people would be able to use on senior components or food stamps by local students outside of school and their park stamps. This gets students to take care of all members of our community. Foods that are grown locally taste better and are better for you. Alas, we don't have many options for locally grown food because most are shipped to lower 48, and they lose a lot of nutrients in the process. So buying locally grown vegetables here would promote health in Fairbanks as well as the growth of the economy. We have a very small school, so we had a garden where all students could work with younger students. It would build our community, help the older and younger students get to know each other, and it would almost build another classroom outside for the fall and the spring. Having a garden would be a fantastic learning experience. By making funding possible year after year, you can help us ensure that school gardens are around for a long time to offer learning experience to many generations of students in our community. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the reason why you should build for House Bill 93 and more school gardens in Alaska.
Hunter, very persuasive. you can't see us here, but we're all just, you're smiling. You touched every one of us. Excuse me, Wendy, are you there, and do you want to testify too, or should we all of us just maybe ask Hunter a few questions?
Hunter's pretty eloquent speaker.
Ask him. We noticed. Thank you. Okay, from the committee, do you have any questions of Hunter? Representative Wilson.
Hunter, I can hear the excitement in your voice when you're looking forward to this. How much of your time are you planning to put into this?
Well, I think it would be a fantastic opportunity for me, so I am most definitely willing to over the summer work for this program and help as much as I can to build a garden. Sure.
Good for you.
Any other questions from committee? Well, Hunter, thank you. That was excellent testimony. Okay, we'll move on. And Mark Lewis, is Mark here? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Lewis. I'm an admin operations manager for the Department of Education and Early Development, Division of Teaching and Learning Support. And I just wanted to talk to the committee this morning about how we built the fiscal note so that we understand what we did with the numbers. And I think you're all perceptive that we just took the maximum amount that was allowed in the bill, the 0.5% of the state aid, and just calculated that out for a bottom line number. And we realized that that would be the maximum allowable. And since we are going to be developing a grant application and an application process, it goes without saying that not all districts would apply, and not all districts would apply for all the funding. But I think we should be aware that there could be a possibility that they have one site and they might want to use all the funding for that one site, but that would be dependent on how the application process vets out. And I think in the process of developing that application, we would work with DNR, DEC, and perhaps the Cooperative Extension Service with the University of Alaska to develop the application so that we meet all the needs that might go into a program such as this. We did check into the concept of gardening, and it does fit into the Alaska content performance standards and grade level expectations, so it does meet that requirement for an educational program. Within the department, we would have to assign the duties to an education specialist to develop the application and the process. There would be some costs associated with administering the program. Within the Division of Teaching and Learning Support, most of the actual grant administration within the program, such as ed specialists, they have to charge to a specific code because most of it's federally funded. So we did ask for a small amount of general fund so that those people working on the project could code it appropriately to a general fund state program. And other than that, I don't really have anything else to add, but if you have some questions about the fiscal note, I'd be happy to answer those.
Question from the committee. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. If we put in transition language that there would be no more than 10 schools the first year and 5 additional for each of the next 4 years, and a limit of $10,000 per school, would that be something that would fit within the application guidelines that you would create, and could you would that be enough parameters to set a fiscal note on?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe it would. We'd be happy to prepare a new fiscal note based on any parameters that this committee decides to impose on us.
And follow-up?
And a follow-up. You indicated that some schools might want to consolidate and have or a district might want to have more than one. The current 50-50 split was approximately $7,500 per farm. From the educational standpoint, do you feel that a $10,000 cap per school would set or per farm would allow the model that you were talking about, but not overly populate the program?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I really can't speak to the actual cost of running the program because we were looking at just on the basis of what was in the bill. We haven't done any outreach or research into actual cost for running the program. I assume that the bill sponsor would have that information or could perhaps work with the nonprofits that are out there to develop costs that would be reasonable to begin a program such as this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark, did you, when you did the fiscal note, did you do it assuming that everyone was paying for meals, or did you do it according to, because a lot of them aren't paying for, so how did you work your fiscal note?
Now, through the chair, Representative Wilson, what I did is I just took the basic amount that they had for state aid that's calculated through the foundation program and applied the 0.5% to that state aid piece. So it's the final calculation, is my understanding, is what we base that on.
Okay, so that included the ones that aren't paying the four meals, theirs was less than because you did include that. I can't remember if that's in the funding formula. I think it is.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Wilson, what we had was the right-hand corner which said this is the state aid that is going to be paid to each individual district, and we based it on that amount.
Representative Kawasaki.
And following up on that point, I guess The question is, the local contribution required, does that come before the state aid contribution, or does that, is that follow?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe Elizabeth Sweeney is here with the foundation or with the school finance section. She could answer where in the calculation that applies, if she wouldn't mind answering that.
Good morning, Chair Dick and committee members. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Sweeney Noodleman, Director of School Finance and Facilities at the department. And through the chair, Representative Seaton, if you could ask that question again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm following up with Representative Wilson's question here, and that is does the local contribution calculation come before the column that we are calculating these numbers from? In other words, is state aid, does that subtract out the unequal assessment, 4 mil or 2 mil or 2.5 mils or 3.2 mils? Is that in the calculation here, or is that done after the calculation?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, state aid is the remainder due to the districts after local is removed. So after the local contribution is paid, then state aid is what remains.
Representative Kawasaki, follow up on that, Glenn.
Yes, please. Because the state pays so much more for some school systems than others, I think it would be a little bit unfair if we based it on what is actually happening, because that way the amount of money for some areas would be a lot more. And so I think if we based it on the 4 mils across the board, that would be a lot more fair.
Through the chair, could you repeat the question?
Well, it was really a statement. It wasn't a question. Because because the funding isn't even, because the state pays a lot more as far as the mill rates go, like, for instance, I don't know what the numbers are, but I know that some of the schools, like Anchorage schools, pay a lot less than the 4 mils, and so does Mat-Su, and I don't know how many do. I think last year even Wrangell had, it went down a point or something like that. But what I'm saying is, because that formula comes out so different, and we're looking at, I'm just trying to decide whether it's fair to use that or not. But I don't know that. It's just something for us to think about.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki.
Yep. Just really quickly, in Section 4 of the bill, it says that a school district authorizing these nonprofits to operate a school garden the district shall apply for these grants. So was it your interpretation in writing the fiscal note that all schools, I guess, they will, or they should, or they shall apply for that grant?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, that's an excellent observation. I would say that usually in legislation, when it's prescriptive language like shall, it means that they are supposed to, but I don't know if that is really the intent of the sponsor, so I think it might be a sponsor question.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Kawasaki, do you want to ask the sponsor on that?
No.
Okay. If there's no other questions, we have Representative Faye.
I'll ask him. What do you think it should say?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David, Representative Guttenberg. We don't want a school district to be applying for something they're not going to do. What you heard from Susan, who is the model with Calypso Farm, the nature of this program and the nature where we want to go is pragmatic, slow, conservative, making sure it has all the chances of success. She pointed out there's school gardens around the country that have failed and they're fallow. We want to go slow. We don't want anybody to apply for something they're not going to use specifically for this purposes, absolutely. And the departments, you know, I agree with kind of the feelings we're getting out of the committee, you know, transitional, no way in the world is there going to be every school district and every school in the state next year going to have a school garden. You know, the Calypso Farm model is pragmatic. Nature of farmers going slowly building things that we've seen, and that what we want is to have success and not have gardens sitting out there that have not followed through.
Thank you. If there's no other question, Francie Havermeister, are you online, Francie?
Yes, Representative Dick, I am. Thank you.
If you go ahead with your testimony.
I am not here to testify on behalf of the bill. I am just here to answer any questions, but I would like to say for the record that we do appreciate the work that Calypso Farm has done with the schools and the children up in Fairbanks. We, as a Division of Ag, strongly support ag education and getting the kids in the dirt. A lot of kids are three generations removed from the farm and do not understand where their food comes from, and they have done a good job in reintroducing that concept.
Very good. Questions from committee towards Francie? Okay. Thank you, Francie. Is Kathy Kerr, are you online?
Hello?
Yes, Kathy, go ahead with your testimony.
Oh, hi, thank you. I'm just an interested party. I have been following similar different programs around the country where there are school gardens located and the impact on the students. And I think the one thing that I would like to add to the conversation is a little bit about a program called Planting Seeds of Change in Lebanon, Oregon. There's a teacher there who took 20 children whose next stop, if there wasn't intervention, was going to be something similar to our McLaughlin Youth Institute. And over the course of a year, teaching most of their standard school curriculum around building a school garden, all of these kids just turned around. And I could say a lot about the program and a lot about the impact of hands-on learning and a place that is safe for children and a place that teaches them not only how to nurture but how to be nurtured. But I think the one thing that I can say that will everybody will understand is these children's standardized test scores went up within 3 months of instituting the program anywhere from 5 to 25% of where they were before. So I think I'll leave it at that. Everyone else has spoken very eloquently about programs, but I think just in terms of the long-term benefit to the schools and the children where these programs might be instituted, there might be some things that may be measurable at some point, but we might see a real turnaround in some of our students' lives in terms of their engagement in school, staying in school, and how they learn to interact within school and outside the community. Thank you very much for taking my testimony.
Thank you, Kathy. Is Shoshana Kuhn there, please? Shoshana, you online?
I am. Hi, good morning, Representatives. I want to say my name is Shoshana Kuhn, and I am a parent, and also I volunteer with Calypso Farms on the Community Outreach and Social Justice Committee. And it is because of the garden at Hunter Elementary School that I became involved in. I want to support what Kathy just finished saying. I do believe that the standardized test scores show a lot. But one of the personal experiences I've had the pleasure of having is my child becoming involved in the Hunter Elementary School garden. And what I have observed as a parent is that her behavior improved, as I have seen with other children that I've just sort of observed. It is The garden for Hunter Elementary particularly is located in, quote-unquote, the roughest neighborhood of Fairbanks. And what I have noticed is that it is the busiest garden and that the kids are just thriving off of having that. And I, too, do believe and support
that even in remote areas, if we're able to get a small plot of land, a small little area of dirt, that we will see a vast improvement in many of the social areas that we concern ourselves with, as far as suicide prevention, abuses, physical abuses, sexual abuses, and stuff like this. The gardens can provide an outlet for these children that have been victimized. We also, it's a great thing to be able to teach our kids where vegetables come from and that they themselves can actually grow them. It's a very valuable skill that I believe we're moving farther away from, and Calypso has given us this opportunity that even though we are a low-income family and we are in a city, that we're able to go and plant a seed and help watch it grow. And not only that, but my child also gets to work with other kids that are in a similar situation who might also have parents that go to the grocery store and look at the vegetables and think, we can't afford that. Well, here's a chance for these children of low-income families to come and work in the garden, and they go home with vegetables. One of the most rewarding things was this summer, I have some friends that are in a very tough situation, and they had never seen a purple carrot before. And I went ahead and I used my fruit stamps, which I was so grateful to be able to buy a fresh vegetable with dirt still on it that my daughter had helped pull out of the garden and deliver it to this family because they took their kid home, and they were just amazed at a purple carrot. And just that right there spoke to me a lot. As far as funding goes, I know that funding will is always a hardship in the school district, but I do strongly feel that this small percentage that has been suggested will come out in many different social areas of development for the children. So the money that, you know, the school district may receive and matching funds, I strongly, strongly feel that it's a great investment in the future. You're teaching kids many different things. Behaviorally, I believe that you will see things improve as well. So I really appreciate Senator Representative Guttenberg bringing this bill to light, and I hope that you all support it, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki, do you have a question?
More of a comment that none of us, I don't think, have ever seen a purple carrot either.
Well, come on down.
I will. Actually, you know what, and I wanted to thank you for your testimony. Hunter Elementary School is in the heart of the district that I represent, and it can't be underscored that this is a school that is in about as urban as you can get, and there's traffic back and forth, and it's a lot of concrete, a lot of apartments. I think, higher than average crime rate in the area. There was a guy that was shot a few years ago, maybe four blocks from the school. And, you know, when they first said that they're going to bring this school garden to the Hunter area, I thought, oh, it's going to get vandalized right away. But it is amazing how much community pride has surrounded that school garden there. You'll have people it's at a pretty busy intersection near the hospital, and people will honk at the students. And it's just great to see students in coveralls and overalls gardening in the middle of summer, and it hasn't been vandalized, and that's just sort of an amazing thing that there's so much community pride that surrounds that particular garden at Hunter. So I wanted to thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the committee? Okay, is there anybody else here in the room or online that I've missed that would like to testify? Representative Wilson.
I just have a question for anybody that's listening that might like to make a comment. In Southeast Alaska, we don't have very much sun, and so we'd probably have to have maybe a greenhouse or something in order to have that happen. Is that a possibility, do you think, or not?
I can speak to that. This is Susan. In terms of the possibility, in terms of this type of thing, working with the greenhouse system, there is a project in place in the works in Juneau through the Cooperative Extension, and they've had some success growing in greenhouses. And as from my understanding of the bill, that type of application in an environment where a greenhouse is a more suitable environment to do growing associated with the school. I think it's a perfect fit.
Okay, thank you.
May I add something? This is Kathy.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, about greenhouses, particularly in areas where we have extreme cold, a lot of Western Alaska fits that bill. There is a way to heat greenhouses passively. I know in Anchorage we have big we have big problems with what to do with, but there's a lot of horses here, what to do with horse waste. And if you dig a really deep hole and fill it with fresh waste that is also a problem to dispose of and cover it with about 2 feet of dirt, it will passively heat your greenhouse for the year. So I think that's something for people in really remote communities who want to grow, who want to extend their growing season, to maybe take a look at. And one other thing I wanted to add that I didn't mention earlier is just around the curriculum for some of these programs. I know recently the state of Alaska has adopted a career and technical education plan, which is, as I understand, fluid and still being formed and taking input. And I think there is some real potential to tie the experiential learning that takes place from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade around a gardening, cooking, culinary art, entrepreneurial program that could be directly related to the career and technical ed program. And I think there is some efforts underway at this time to develop that program and how to make each of those gardens more sustainable, different entrepreneurial things that can be done within the school to make those programs more sustainable, which means they would not require as much state funding as they got going. Thank you.
Good. Follow up?
I just really appreciate that. On our island in Wrangell, we actually have quite a few horses, so that might work.
There you go. There's something you can do with it. And I also encourage you, when you tear down a building that might have double pane windows and you're going to go in and put triple pane windows in, take those old windows and build yourself a greenhouse. It's a good thing to do, and they don't have to go to the dump as well.
Very good. Thank you. Before we put this one to rest, this has been an enjoyable time. It seems to have an energy of its own. I would like to point the committee to, on your desk in front of you, there's two pieces of paper. One here has Sheila's name in the upper left corner. If we could turn to that. Does everybody have that? Okay. And the other is called the Introduction to Science Performance Standards. When I did my homework on this bill, I did this, and I did it for two reasons. One, I wanted the committee to show the committee what teachers and educators go through when they have a project or something that they want to do, that how they have to align the project with the state standards, the content standards, and the performance standards. So if we could look at the page that has Sheila's name on it, I went through, turned to the second page, this one here on the science standards, and I think you have it circled. If I were a teacher in a classroom, I would see under science standard A, it would be A1, would be to develop and understand the process of science using investigative problems. So the garden would qualify there. And under A3 would be a local applications of that. Under B, science concept, physical science. 3 was in develop an understanding of interaction between matter and energy. As a teacher, I would see that as demonstrating photosynthesis. And under concepts of life science, 1 would be including genetics, a little reference there. 2, develop an understanding of structure, function, behavior, development, and life cycles, and diversity of living organisms. I saw that as being rather strong. And under 3, develop an understanding that all organisms are linked together and their physical environments to a transformation of matter and energy. That was, again, photosynthesis. And if you'd, we could turn to the next page. Be under science and technology, I thought it would develop an understanding that solving problems involves different ways of thinking, perspective, curiosity, that lead to exploration of multiple paths that are analyzed using scientific, technological, and social merits. And I can see Representative Guttenberg thanking me for doing the homework.
We have another page here from the Fairbanks North Star that's similar to the state's.
Okay. Same thing. And under G, History and Nature of Science, develop an understanding that the advancement of scientific knowledge embraces innovation, requires empirical evidence, repeatable investigations, and possible explanations of the natural world. And under G4, develop understanding that advancements in science depend on curiosity, creativity, imagination, and a broad knowledge base. And I won't take you to the rest of it, but I really wish you would take a look at the introduction to science performance standards, and so you can get an idea of what teachers, as they try to relate the community to the projects and to the standards that are required by the state, this is what teachers go through. Mm-hmm. So I did this for two reasons. One, so the committee could appreciate what teachers go through, but two, I was hoping it would also be a model that as people come to us with bills in the future, that they would also do the homework on this and be far more convincing to us if you can show us how those bills relate to what we are supposed to be directing the teachers in the districts to go to. Did you want to comment further?
No, what we've heard here in the matching up the curriculum, the practical side of life, we've heard anecdotal stories about from the students, the enthusiasm they have, the social aspects of grounding students so that they turn around and have problems. Those are all the side of it that that make it shine even brighter.
Representative Seaton. I take that back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of our discussion items on funding here and transition language as well was talking about winding down the state percentage, giving more upfront for establishing a farm or something. And I would just like to caution everyone, my experience at least, is that you can get capital grants, you can get USDA grants for greenhouse, you can get the initial hard money to establish something, but what it really takes and why these school gardens are abandoned across the country is it takes some continual input for helping with that operational funds. And so I think that the way that this bill has lined out with 50% of that cost, and we can put whatever limitation, but I think that that's really the important thing, because you can get everybody ginned up and wanting to do it and engage students and that initial funding, but it's the ongoing incremental amount that if that's not there, that's when things fall apart. So I would hope that we would keep it at the split, the 50-50 split, because I think that that's the continuity portion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Brief at ease. Order. Could we have Representative Munoz or Kendra come forward? Do you have any further questions on House Bill 132? Any further questions, committee? Any additional public testimony? Brief at ease.